Everyone's a winner, ladies and gents. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Sean Dyche is back with a bang. It's Monday, 6th of February. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Pete Donaldson.
And I'm David Cartledge.
Happy Monday, everybody. Good to have you with us. Oh, my goodness. I do love a weekend. I don't know about you, boys. There's another one coming soon, Jim.
Yeah, they keep coming around.
Don't be
just
so...
for you.
Indeed, they do. Jim Campbell, I want to start with you. What
do
was
you
your
know?
Highlight of the weekend?
My highlight of the weekend was, of course, the Patreon watch-along, which
of
we'll
course.
Get onto, I'm sure. But separately from that, there was a lovely moment in the Premier League where Victor Christensen made his debut for Leicester City. And at the end of the game, he hugged his mum.
This
is very, very wholesome.
I do like that.
Very sweet.
If you could hug anyone's mum, Jim, who would it be?
Probably my own, because I am a nice boy.
No, it was like someone else's.
Yours.
There you go.
We all want to hug Marcus's mum.
Did you nearly say Sven's?
I nearly said Sven's, yeah.
Sven's mum.
Sven turned 75 yesterday.
He did, as did Neymar.
75.
Big day for Patey Boy. Party Boys.
Patey Boys? What's
Patey
happening
boys.
To me today?
It's a Monday.
It is a Monday.
I once went to a, you know, those cold readers who sort of talk to the dead and stuff.
No. Psychics.
Sorry, psychics, yeah. They.
Cold readers.
He said, he went to a woman in the crowd and went, I'm seeing a mum.
Anyone here had a mum?
He went to the oldest person he could see in the crowd. And went, I'm thinking, I'm getting in contact with a mum. And she went, mum's still alive. How old are you?
I'm 80.
Something like that.
Wow. Shameless grifters.
Yeah. Awful.
Well, politely put, really, Jim, in a way. David, other than cold readers and hugging mums, what was your highlight of the weekend?
Yeah, I'm not doing wholesome. I'm doing that mad bastard Christian Romero.
You love it, don't you?
I love him. I love him. Yeah, I just love him.
You love a shithouse, in particular an Argentinian one.
And he's really, really stretching the limit. Yeah. I mean, he's got big Sergio Ramos vibes coming about him. But so his two tackles where he put in, it was one of those where I want to let him know that I'm here.
Yes.
So he scythed through Haaland, took the yellow, and every time the ball was potentially going to come to Haaland, he was just looking about. The camera was panning at him, and he was looking about, where's Romero at? And then obviously he got a red card later on for his swipe on Grealish as well.
That was outrageous. To do that on a booking, absolutely outrageous.
But Spurs fans get this. He got a standing ovation as well.
And
it wasn't finished there. He went on Instagram, so I think he's posted 4 or 5 pictures in his carousel.
Yep.
Two of them are the yellow card decisions. One of them is when he's walking off. He's just brilliant. He just does not give you a shit. I love him.
Apparently before the game, he admitted that he's been watching the World Cup final every day.
He's probably hearing it in his head all the time.
Oi, there we are again. Oi, look, they think they're going to win this. They're coming back. Nope.
I want him to enter the end of the field of play through like a plate glass. Like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay. Yeah. I think
I'm ready.
He'd be up for that, I think.
He's more like Triple H with a sledgehammer, I
think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that what you. So, you know, at Spurs. Is it
tries not to hit someone with it. He's sort of doing that all the time.
You know, all that nonsense when they would be like, oh, if you pay, like, you know, £3 million, you can get a ticket for the match and see the players in the tunnel as they walk out.
Yeah.
And it was that glass thing. I think they may have that at Spurs.
Yes.
He should just come through that.
Yes.
That'd be worth £3 million, whatever it is.
Get us some craft ale.
Lovely. But he gets a pint which fills up from the bottom.
He does, yeah.
There we are, you see. It all makes sense in the end. Yeah. Peter, your highlight of the weekend.
I love you, Marcus. It's not even football related. It kind of is, because the injury was caused at football, but it was you giving me a massage about 5 minutes ago.
Well, no, that's not on the weekend. It's very much Monday morning. The gates are shut.
Oh, okay.
But I do appreciate that.
Yeah, okay, that's all I've got then. Right. I enjoyed the West Ham player who scored for West Ham scoring, because my father-in-law is a big fan of his, but he just it just doesn't look like it's happening for him in England. So
and also all this kind of recent success on the field for Newcastle, you're getting a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
With it.
I'm glad West Ham got a point, because I don't want them to just go down. Really,
we need to drop 2 points at home just to get back into what this club is all about.
Yeah,
fair enough. My highlight of the weekend was Keylor Navas for Nottingham Forest. Absolutely, rolling back the years. He's 36 now, but I love the fact that
why are they playing 36-year-olds? That squad.
Yeah, Dean Henderson's angry. But I think it's just like chucking a you know, what was it, a three-time Champions League winner? It's the pull of the Premier League. Like, Caelan Havertz, had he even heard of Nottingham Forest? And that is no disrespect to Nottingham Forest, but because they've not been in the Premier League for so long.
No.
Turns up, a packed house. And I think a player like that, I wonder what he thinks, because he's played for, obviously, Real Madrid, PSG in European competition. Turns up, he's like, this is bloody brilliant.
I never thought I'd get to play with Jonjo Shelvey. And right at the death, I've snuck it into my career.
Indeed. But Forest, they're on the march, aren't they?
They are.
They literally were stamping on Jesse Marsh. and Brennan Johnson, mate, what a goal. So they're going places, Peter.
They are.
You're a
Jesse
Forest.
Marsh has gone places as well.
Not where he wants to go.
No.
I see. Oh. You've got the inside track of you.
Yeah,
cover all bases just before he does get sacked after we finish recording. He's still in the job at the time of recording. Of course, everybody, Jim's, Pete's and my highlight of the weekend was the Patreon watch-along with some of you good Patreon people. It was a lovely old time. We were in a pub in central London. We witnessed, of course, Spurs beat Manchester City, which we will come on to in a short time. But Jim, wasn't it lovely again?
It was.
Breaking beer with our Patreon.
Breaking beer with our lovely Patreon subscribers. Yeah, thank you to everyone who came along and made it so fun and just nice, wasn't it? It's just a lovely time was had by all.
Spotted Spells, you having a bit of Kahlua and Baileys, Baby Guinness.
Yeah, I did have a Baby Guinness, yeah.
You made everyone sing a round of happy birthday for Sven.
I did, yeah. You can find that on my Twitter page. Just follow me, at Marcus Spell. it was lovely. Do you know what is great going to these Patreon meets and so on is everyone is bloody lovely. You have a good time and you learn interesting. I learned that Pocahontas, who I always thought was fictional,
did you?
Well, I didn't really think, Peter. I've not seen it.
Think, right.
Buried in Gravesend.
Mm. Oh, really?
Also a relative of Edward Norton, which was recently discovered.
Is that right?
Yeah.
King Edward Norton.
Edward Norton. Why not? Yeah.
Well, there we are, everybody. Right, let us move on to... thank you once again, Patreon people. We love you dearly. Let us move on to the outstanding result of the weekend in the Premier League. Everton 1, Arsenal 0. The Sean Dyche effect. Jim, you said on Friday that you were concerned about this game because of Sean Dyche arriving, and I nearly sort of stopped you in your tracks, but I didn't, and I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Goodison's actually been a bogey ground for us. We've not won there since 2017, and that's frustrating because Goodison's really a bogey ground for Everton, and you feel like it's something you should be able to overcome. But a Dwight McNeil corner onto James Tarkowski's head is just like, it is the most Dyche thing possible in circumstances. And it's frustrating how predictable it was.
You could have and would have written it.
Indeed. Yeah.
I mean, it's stunning stuff, David. I mean, you talked about Dyche going there and actually some of the players would fit his style potentially. And Calvert-Lewin, who on another day might have scored, and so on and so forth. But it was, Jim's right. You know, you look at that performance, you look at the goal and whatnot, it's exactly what they need.
Yeah, it emphasised my point in that I think there was a lot of players already there who were ready-made for Dyche. You look at that midfield, they were fantastic. They were exactly what Dyche wants. There was a lot of grit in that midfield. And then, like I said, they kept compact, they were organised. Mm-hmm. Of course, they let Arsenal know they were there. There were some meaty challenges. It was very physical, as Arsenal probably is expected. It was exactly what you'd want. And I think it was a new manager bounce, but I think that's maybe simplifying it. I think there's a lot more to this. I just really do think he's ideal in terms of the confidence that he's going to give them. The scenes as well. I mean, I think the camera was panning around Everton Stadium. People were hugging each other. There was big smiles on their faces. You can already see there's just a massive lift there because that place has been toxic.
Yes, it has been. But Dyche is, again, the figure he cuts and what he was saying and so on. You just think, there's a guy who knows what he's about, knows the league, da-di-da-di-da.
Yeah.
And so, and of course, I know we can be a little bit sort of, well, sneery or sort of, you know, have a little joke at his expense, and we will do that.
Yeah.
But...
oh, there's loads of stereotypes about Dyche. When people do impressions of him, they do a northern accent. It's from Kettering. Yeah.
We're guilty of that. We are guilty of that. I was told by one of our patrons that they once saw Sean Dyche and his family in a Hooters in Nottingham.
Yes.
Oh, that's brilliant, that Hooters. any time anyone brings up Nottingham, I always say the Hooters. So the fantastic. Hooters.
Apparently there's going to be another one in Liverpool.
Is that right?
Really? So now Nottingham won't be the only place in the UK that has
it. Good.
And Dyche
good.
Can
there should
remain,
be more.
You know, can keep really changed.
Hang on, David. Do I want to ask David more about this? Yeah. Go on then. Why is it so good?
The wings are excellent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the wings are brilliant.
Right, okay.
And the service is fantastic
there
as
we
well.
Are.
Yeah.
Right. Well, apparently Dyche was a lovely man by this account. I say by all accounts, very much by that account. But he's having an effect. And Amadou Onana who's doing good stuff at Everton. Dyche was very complimentary about his performance, although he wants to, him to become a little bit more like a
nasty boy,
a little more of one of his Burnley boys.
Yeah. I think that'll get the extra, like, you know, level out of him as well.
Well, quite possibly. Yeah.
He was fantastic. He's been brilliant. By the way, I want to say about Onana, throughout all of this Everton suffering, Onana has been very, very good.
He has.
And then his performance went up a level here.
Yeah, yeah.
He really had it about him. And I think he's good. I think Dyche is going to... I wonder if Dyche has had a player as good as him, as technically as gifted
well,
as he
is. That's a fair point, actually. I mean, Onana was filmed on Everton's Twitter walking down the tunnel saying, "I'm fucking going nowhere." He really is.
Yeah.
Ever since the window shut, he's really emphasised the fact he's going nowhere. Yeah. I know that sounds a bit harsh, but
like you can't go anywhere now.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think that's the kind of thing that the fans want to hear. Yeah.
He was brilliant. I mean, he's 6'4". He's incredibly. Incredibly sort of technical for such a kind of destructive player as well. And I think, you know, it's
you
a
stopped yourself really saying good touch for a big boy.
I
there,
absolutely
didn't you?
Did not, no. Although I essentially did say that in a different wording. But I think this is a really, for Dyche, actually, this is a really good sense of timing. Everyone's talking about what Everton need from him. But actually, from in terms of his career, it's actually, I mean, Everton are a really big club. This is a chance for him to really sort of kick on a level. And the new manager bounce idea often comes from players trying to prove to their manager that they've got something. This is different from that. This is his methods being applied immediately and effectively. And, you know, this is the blueprint of how they're going to play for their entire time under him. I'm sure he's going to tweak it here and there, but it was a really impressive display. They were so, so good in the press as well. And it's not like Arsenal haven't dealt with that before. You know, they are built to deal with that sort of game. But Everton should have won by more goals.
They should have done, yeah. I mean, look, when you talk about Dyche and the style of play and so on, this is exactly what Everton need. We saw this with Allardyce however many seasons ago it was. The thing for Everton is, you know, people might say, "Oh, Dyche, you know, he's not going to get you, you know, hugely, you know, in the lofty positions of the league and so on and so forth." That's not what they need. They need to survive. They need to stay in the Premier League. It's the here and now. And I know Everton have. It's often been about the here and now and all this kind of stuff. But that is the job right now, of course. If Dyche keeps them up into next season, you know, that's when these kind of conversations, you know, start to develop a bit more. But you know, he looks like he's got the bit between the teeth already. You know, as you said, David, you know, it's changed the atmosphere in the stadium and they've got a great result. Mikel Arteta speaking on the radio after the game, a Freudian slip, credit to Burnley. They play, I think, a really good game.
Yeah.
I mean, Burnley are playing really good games this season, you know, in the Championship, but you know what he means. But with regards to Burnley and Dyche, because we've not seen Dyche, really, for such a long time elsewhere. We think of him as Mr. Burnley, of course. But he then does go and say about Onana, I told him I would get former Burnley player Stephen Defoe to speak with him because he wants him to learn the ugly side of the game. And he said, he will rub off on Onana, and if he doesn't, I'll rub off on him.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Motivate your players by threatening them.
It is also...
Maybe you'll take him to Hooters. I don't know. Also worth mentioning with Mikel Arteta's Freudian slip, right? It sounds quite disrespectful to Everton, but like, he was Everton's captain for a long time.
That's how much Dyche gets in your head.
Oh, dear. But I mean, so Arteta, yes, of course, he spent many years at Everton. He also spent time with Pep Guardiola, of course. And speaking of rubbing off, you know, that is happening to him with regards to Pep. He said after the match, "I want the team to know how much I love them." I mean, that is straight out of the Pep book, isn't it? "I love them much more now than 3 hours ago, a week ago, a month ago, 3 months ago." You love them now than in the past. Mm. "This journey is going to be difficult. There's going to be big stones in the middle and we have to overcome that."
Is the top of the Premier League just going to be dominated by absolute weirdos?
But the whole league is. Like, Dyche is the only one that isn't a massive weirdo.
I think this is... All I'm saying is Enrique Iglesias is going to write a song about this title run. I think, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a real loving, but I mean,
intense weirdos.
Yeah, but what about the Arsenal side of this, Jim? Are you concerned because it was a very flat performance from Arsenal?
It was a flat performance. I mean, I've been saying all season there are going to be periods like this that happen. There are going to be setbacks. I think we're kind of trained to think that, like, you know, getting close to 100 points is normal for a champion, and I don't think it is. Like, this every season. title-winning teams have games like this happen. So if Arsenal want to keep up their attempt at becoming a title-winning team, what is important now is how they react to this. Brentford at home up next. Brentford are in good form, so that's going to be a tough game. They need to sort of realign themselves and move on from this. Last season, when they lost the game, they would then go and lose two more. And obviously, they're on a run of two defeats if you count the FA Cup as well, which obviously do, because that is a game. So
you're right. I think at this stage of the season, if you say Arsenal, you will win 16 out of 20 games, and you only have two losses. One of them will be Sean Dyche's Everton. You think, well, you bite your hand off of that, you know.
Absolutely. So,
but Jim's right, though, Dave, isn't he? It's how you respond to this.
I think it's why. I mean, I know you're saying about Arteta's interview being a bit strange, but I think that's why he did it. He was focused completely on positivity, and it links to what you've just said there.
His next game, isn't
it? Yeah, he's wanting them to avoid previous slips, previous mistakes. He's wanting them to change the mentality, and this is all about part of changing the identity of Arsenal, and this is one of those. Respond to a setback in a positive manner, and I think that's what he was getting at. It was very much protecting his boys.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, we're saying about Guardiola, I thought it was a bit Mourinho. It was like, these are my boys, these are my boys, you know, this is my, you know, so that's
well,
what
well, if you, if you, if you're challenging both of those guys, then you might be onto something, but I totally take that point. I mean, it's play the ball where it lies. It's like, well, let's not worry about how we got here. Right, there we are. But my concern then would be, or not a concern, my intrigue, if after this defeat he's then talking about, I love these boys, I love them. If they were to lose again, he'd go up the ante.
Do you love them more or less?
Is he just going to go around them in the
tricks today?
No. I think is he going to go around the dressing room after the game and just start kissing them all? You know, where does this go?
Yeah, I have different concerns. Okay. But, yours are noted.
I appreciate that.
Put on the record.
Well, in the other game involving a North London side of the Premier League, it was a good result for Arsenal. Spurs won.
A neighbourly victory. Such a neighbourly performance from Spurs. I can't believe it.
Tottenham Hotspur helping Arsenal out with a 1-0 victory against Manchester City. There was one or two Spurs fans or Spurs sympathisers at the Patreon watch-along, and they were suggesting that they might rather Man City win because they don't want Arsenal to win the league.
It was
Arsenal,
a confusing game for me as well.
Arsenal was supporting Tottenham Hotspur. Mm. It all got a bit messed up, Pete Donaldson, does it not?
It did. I thought it was a lot of fun. I like this confusing new Premier League.
Well, you're all about this, you know, because sometimes you want Newcastle to concede goals.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And you never know where I'm going to stand on things.
Keep you on your toes, yeah, and everybody else. Well, yeah, of course, Manchester City lost the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium once again. They've never won or even scored there.
That is an incredible stat.
It really is.
And
they've scored as many goals as I have there, David.
It looked like they could have played a couple of hours and wouldn't have scored as well. Yeah. They were nowhere near.
Cristiano Ramiro would have been on about 9 cards.
But, I mean, do you think it's the long journey down to London that puts them off? Because Pep Guardiola said before the game, or I forget when, he said in the vicinity of this match, he said, coming to London is like going to Northern Europe. It is 4 hours, 20 minutes, 4 hours and a half to get to a hotel. It's so exhausting coming to London.
Yeah, Manchester to Piccadilly to Euston is 2 hours 15 on the train. We checked that.
Yeah,
I mean, I know you've got a commute either side, but I don't think this is why they lost.
No, it's a load of shite.
You've been preparing
all week and training. So you've been preparing all week, and he's going to, out of the whole week, he's going to take 4 hours and say, oh, that's what's absolutely messed up this. No, it's absolute garbage.
You are fuming about that.
Yeah, because it's just such a ridiculous, like, loose comment to make. You know, when you've been preparing all week, it's just.
Did he take the.
Is he not apologising to the supporters for the distance they've had to travel?
Definitely not. He doesn't like them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Did he put them on the easy bus or something? You know that bus?
Did you get how big Germany is?
Yeah, right. Spain, even.
Spain.
Yeah. England is a tiny little country.
Tiny little lad.
What is the problem? Quite well connected to the major cities on the train.
Very expensive.
Well, that is maybe that's why they didn't do it. We know they lack money.
Cancelling all the returns. You have to buy two singles these days. Yeah.
Didn't the the high speed 2 rail network Twitter feed tweet them? Basically, yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? Yeah. We're working away.
It's the age we live in, where a train will take the piss out of you.
Anyone will these days. Fast food company. Yeah. Expensive. It's just anyone will have a dig.
That's true. If you open yourselves up to it. Of course, the game will be remembered for Harry Kane scoring. He overtook Jimmy Greaves to become Spurs' all-time record scorer with 267 goals. There seems a little bit of confusion about how many goals Greaves got actually for Spurs, blah, blah, blah. But it's that the fireworks have been lit off. He has got the record now, 267. It's absolutely incredible. Kane said, it's a magical moment. I was so desperate to do it with a win. And that is true, because if they're like 4-0 down and he gets the last goal, you can't really look happy, can you?
I wonder how long it took for Greaves to get on the telly after he finished playing.
Right.
It was like 10 years before he started doing Saints and Greavesy. So I just want to see Kane's and Sons.
Kane and Son.
Kane and Shreevesy.
Kane and Shreevesy.
Oh, please don't. Son, Son, didn't he say that he fancied him to go and beat Alan Shearer's record?
Yeah.
Which, you know.
I saw in that match, though, there was a lot of times where he was kind of like unmarked and he was about to just let an absolute howitzer off in the box. And instead of like whacking it top right, I don't know what he was just going for, like, almost getting a defender to deflect it in. He was doing low, hard shots. And I was like, Alan Shearer would have
rifled that.
Protect
top
your
right.
men.
Absolutely rifled it.
You don't want a fancy Southerner with a record.
No, but maybe the stats say that if you whip it in really
your dad's
quick,
bigger
it'll
than
knock
his
it.
Dad as well.
If you whip it in really quick, it'll go in. I don't know they must have sort of done some studies on that. But absolutely hammering it as hard as you can at the keeper, probably not the way to go.
Do you remember when Maradona went to watch Spurs play?
And he was
clearly in the past. But I was about to say,
you know what he likes now.
Yeah,
floating around. You might be here.
he was always floating around, let's be honest. And he was there speaking to Kane, and he was telling Kane to shoot across the goalkeeper.
Yes.
And it was just brilliant. Like, I love the fact that you've got arguably the greatest player of all time. You've got the guy who's on for becoming one of Spurs' greatest.
The guy who's got the greatest agent of all time.
Indeed, yes. They've got a lot in common. And they're still having like a really basic football conversation that I would have with one of my mates. Or something. You know, it's absolutely wonderful stuff. Yeah. But they got, it was an important win. And Kane apparently received a phone call from Antonio Conte after the game, which was nice.
It was like a video call, wasn't it? I can just imagine him sort of sawing himself up, pouring rye whiskey on it. Listen! Head on.
Yeah, exactly. You should have had two.
Shoot
across the goalkeeper. But it's 200th Premier League goal. Only Alan Shearer and Wayne Rooney have hit that milestone. Kane did it in two fewer games than Alan Shearer. 304 games, which was impressive. And as I said a moment ago, Son backed him to break Shearer's Premier League scoring record.
He probably will if he can stay fit, to be fair.
Yeah.
Shearer's had a lot of time out.
I mean, there's been...
And that's why he's still better.
Well, all right, Peter. Is Harry Kane just a one record wonder?
I mean, to be fair, he's done it in fewer games, Pete.
Yeah.
But Kane has been slightly criticised about not scoring in some of the bigger games and having sort of big moments. Now, I know this is a league game, so it won't be classified as a big moment, but fewer bigger than Manchester City.
I think even beyond that as well, people question his ambition, don't they?
Mm.
Like they say, why is he staying around at Spurs? Why
isn't
he forced?
It's his brother's fault. It's his brother's ambition.
So there is. I think this debate's always going to stick around him. Shearer had it as well, didn't he? You know, Shearer didn't leave Newcastle. They said is he just happy just doing that? Why is he not challenging himself? Why is he not pushing himself? So Kane's going to get exactly the same sort of thing as well. And it depends what you value more. Having this goal scoring record. What you think? I wonder how many goals you give up for a Carabao Cup or an FA Cup.
Yeah, I love how you said a Carabao Cup.
Yeah,
or a Spanish league title if he was wanting to go to say Real Madrid or something. Or Andy, I think it was Andy talking about with Bayern and so on. But we shall see. But let him enjoy this moment. But it was a great win for Spurs, though. and Spurs themselves. I mean, they are challenging for top four. Of course, they're just one point behind Newcastle United, who, as we said, dropped points. They've played a game in hand, but I mean, they need to keep it up because Brighton are chomping at the bit to try and get that fifth space. And even could even be better. I don't want to derail the chat here. But what about Man City themselves? An underwhelming performance. Jamie Carragher suggested that Erling Haaland might have joined the wrong side. Gary Neville saying, well, this is all a bit strange and so on. Is this a touch harsh, bearing in mind what Manchester City have done over the last five or whatever years it's been under Pep Guardiola? You know, they are still second. Or do you think that it's just beginning to kind of, maybe a bit of, I don't know, I don't want to say inertia, but it's just not quite clicking at the moment for them.
No, I think Haaland is an issue. Look, he's not a problem. He's just an issue. He's something that they have to figure out. They have to solve. And they're at the moment unrecognisable from what they once were. Yeah. They are so far removed from that. There's no consistency there. I think a lot of the players are a little bit curious about how they are operating as well. They don't seem to be functioning in terms of playing that sweeping football that everyone knew they were about. De Bruyne is on the bench there as
well.
Yeah,
that was strange.
Yeah, that was a strange one. And that was the thing. Whenever a City team comes out nowadays, and don't get me wrong, Guardiola's always had this about him, but it seems to be more profound now. Whenever there's a City team announced, people's just like, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah.
And it seems to be every week. So you can imagine what the players are like when that team's coming out and they're looking at things and there's no rhythm there, I don't think, in the team because they're not used to playing the same team every single week. There's no, you know, format to how they play. I think they're really, really struggling.
Yeah, they are struggling, but they're, you know, they're still in the title race. And actually, if you think about it, if you kind of flip it around, if they're away to Spurs and Arsenal are playing Everton, and you say, well, actually, you'll stay within the same gap. You know, they might have actually taken it. Obviously, as the way it goes, Arsenal lose that game. But you're more likely to lose away to Spurs, of course, than you are to lose away from Everton. But, you know, they've got to be careful, Manchester City, because Manchester United are only 3 points behind them, for crying out loud, in the league. You know, I mean, you talk about going for first, you know, you want to make sure that that doesn't happen. I mean,
It's almost like a flex, isn't it? They sort of say, I can keep Gundogan and De Bruyne on the bench. Mm.
Yeah.
Not bother playing
and send Cancelo away.
It's like, what's it all about?
I know what you mean, yeah. I mean, it would be quite something if Manchester United finished above them in the league, though.
Yeah.
After they beat Palace 2-1. Although they will be missing Casemiro for
a little while. It's a huge miss as well, isn't it?
That was
three
silly.
Games.
That was silly.
Very silly.
Yeah. Ten Hag said on Casemiro's red card, when you freeze, Casemiro has crossed the line, but many more players are crossing the line.
So
when he says freeze, do you mean pause?
Pause.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that Bill Hicks routine when he talks about the LA riots. It's like if you play the video backwards, if you do a lot of stuff, like he should have been off.
Yeah.
He should have been off.
Gabby Agbonlahor claimed that he should have been arrested for that foul, though.
Yeah, he says a lot of stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah, indeed.
He says, can you say something like contentious?
Contentious.
And he goes, yeah, all right then. And he says something mad, and you're like, oh, that's just too much.
Not that bad. Yeah, not incriminating. I think it's time for a break.
Go around the Premier League and ask all of the Premier League managers, do you play the looky-likey game? And if they give you a boring answer, we'll drive down and we'll slap them with a wet fish.
It is a Midlands accent.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Peter, you got
Hello.
An email in
got
your
an
hand.
Email from George Else. Who else? Just a little story. I think you'd enjoy following on from the recent chat about Scarborough Athletic in Flamingoland. The charity I help run play one of our games on a pitch where Hallam FC, who sit 12th in the Northern Counties East Premier Division, currently train. During a post-game pint in the clubhouse afterwards, we overheard a conversation from one of the Hallam FC coaches. It turns out that their striker had received an offer to play for Scarborough a couple of weeks ago, which included a fairly standard £500 a week wage alongside a slightly more interesting added bonus of every Friday and Saturday night he wanted a lodge in Flamingoland and free yearly VIP passes for him and three others. Unfortunately, though, he did have to turn down the offer due to childcare issues.
Yeah.
Well, Flamingoland's perfect childcare, isn't it?
Well, this is a man
sitting
who's
in
not
front of a sea lion.
The recent change in his life. Right? Oh, maybe I could go to a theme park every weekend. I'm sure you can do that and raise a kid, right?
What I like about it, if you go, Flamingoland's not what it once was, and it wasn't great to start with.
God, that sounds bleak.
So it's got
that
better.
But, well, Jesus Christ, Flamingoland in decline.
The Google reviews, because me and Dave were talking about this before. Dave never went to Flamingoland, but he did go to Beamish. Do you remember like the Wasps at Beamish?
Yes.
Right.
What was Beamish?
It's a historical Victorian sort
of
town.
Like olden days, you go in to like see where an old sweet shop looked like.
And old dentists, barber surgeon, stuff like
sounds
that.
Sounds great.
Yeah. It's pretty good. But just there's Wasps everywhere. And similar vibe in Flamingoland from memory. It's the only time I've ever been stung by a Wasp. But in the Google reviews...
there's Wasps everywhere.
Honestly, it's mad. In the Google reviews...
Well, in the old sweet shop, everyone covered themselves in honey, didn't they?
Just after the scene. In the reviews, it says, in the Google reviews, people often mention, right, out of all the reviews, 590 people have mentioned the queues, 88 people have mentioned the sea lions, 59 people are mentioning wasps.
Is that right?
59 people got too many fucking wasps!
How do you get rid of them?
I don't know.
I mean,
you could sort it out, I reckon, eventually. But a lot of the other reviews just mentioned, one of the reviews says, in general, the place is tired, worn and dirty. We found vomit in the baby helicopter rides.
Amazing.
The food in the Costa, I would not serve to the animals that are here.
But you probably shouldn't. You don't want to be feeding a flamingo a panini.
Even the wasps wouldn't have that food.
Even the wasps wouldn't take it.
I mean, you just flies are like, I usually just vomit and stamp on this to suck up the food, but I won't say that.
Held a house party, and we later determined that there was a wasp's nest in a wall over the road, or basically backing onto our house, which was in some way disturbed. Basically, the party was flooded with wasps.
Wow.
It was mental. It was really, really weird.
That's one way to get rid of them.
Died. Yeah. It was the next day. It was just hung over people and dead wasps everywhere. Brilliant. Bennett, Jim.
Oh dear. Well, but you got away with it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Indeed. All right, everybody. Let's go back into the Premier League, shall we? Wolverhampton Wanderers 3, Liverpool 0. What a win for those Wolves. They needed it, being down, near the bottom of the table. They move up to 15th, just 2 points above the relegation zone, of course, after that Everton win. But a vital victory for them. Inevitably, David, people will talk about Liverpool in this game, but we should give credit to Wolves because, you know, they don't score that many goals and they got three of the buggers.
I was going to say, lowest scorers in the Premier League before this.
Yeah.
Three goals conceded. They took advantage. Everybody knows what Liverpool are like right now. They're all over the place.
Yeah. Totally. Traore got an assist.
Yeah.
He did. I mean, that never happened.
I felt a bit sorry for him because he seemed to be like really delighted with it, but yet Neves just run off, and I think Traore went over to him and was a bit like, hey! And
he just helped!
Get out of the way. I scored the goal, which was a lovely take, by the way. And Dawson, on his debut? I think Dawson was playing on his debut for Wolves as well. But yeah, I mean, Liverpool 2-0 down after 12 minutes. They're all over the place.
They are.
This keeps happening. So you look at the away defeats. It's Brighton, Brentford and Wolves. They've all conceded three against. Mm-hmm. Three successful away defeats.
Yeah.
Then it could be a lot more as well, by the way. Yes, these games could have been four,
five,
six. Well,
you're checking the FA Cup. Well, I know it wasn't by three, but they still lost the game. It is... A lot is happening at Liverpool. I mean, some Liverpool fans may say, oh, well, if you get a few players back from injury, that will help, but it's not going to solve this.
No.
You know, a few more signings. Of course, they have made signings, but just a few more. That will help. Not going to solve it. There's so much going on at Liverpool. Melissa Reddy has written a very good piece on Sky Sports, mapping out a lot of it. And she refers to it as the brain drain going on at Liverpool. They've lost very key figures in very key positions in the
back room.
In the back room, yeah. That's the word I'm looking for, yes. And so much has to change to get Liverpool back to where they were. Yeah. Now, of course, if you've got Klopp as a manager, you've got, you know, great support, and you've got these players and whatnot, yeah, you can, you know, dust yourself off and next season get some players back. And you can have a respectable season. But the highs that we've seen at Liverpool in the last few years, so much has to happen to get them back to that.
I don't think they can really think of it like that, though, because they have to do a regeneration
of
the squad, don't they? So they can't be going, oh, I remember when Mane did this and when Salah was doing that.
But the point I'm making, Jim, is that if people think that just a few signings and a few people come back from injury will get them back to Champions League finals and all that, it's got to be
a rebuild.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to completely reinvest in the midfield.
They need a whole
new midfield for me.
Yeah.
And look, they should definitely keep Klopp. I mean, there's talk, should Klopp or should Tuchel come in or whatever like that. Klopp should stay, absolutely. I would let him oversee the rebuild, of course. I think he's done enough. He's got enough credit in the bank and he's, I think you have to give it to him. But he has to be more ruthless with players. You've got Milner there. Yeah. You've got Henderson. Mm. There's talk of Firmino getting a new contract. So you've got these players who he's sticking with, and it feels like the wrong one. So Mane was allowed to go. He went.
Yeah,
it's something strange what Klopp's doing, I think, as well. I think he's part of the problem, but I don't think he is the problem. I don't think you remove him. So they've got a lot of work to do.
But those who worked in did a lot of recruitment stuff, who were... You know, the brains of the operation, to use Melissa Reddy's terms, some of them have gone. You know, I think Klopp feels a bit exposed at the moment.
Yeah,
and again, it shows you what a sort of a behemoth like club Liverpool are. You've got so many of these things. You know, the idea that you have a manager come in and he does all the decisions and blah 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 blah. That may still work at certain clubs, but a club like Liverpool, you need so many people, or not so many people. You need a number of people who are all on top of their game, all pulling in the same direction, da 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 da. And if you've had changes which have not gone their way in that club, if people have left and whatnot, and it's incredibly difficult. And I said not that long ago on the pod
that come the summer, there may be difficult question, difficult conversations for Klopp and the club. Now, I don't think Klopp will be sacked. I don't mean that. I think there will be difficult conversations to have in, hang on, what is going on here? Yeah. We need to sort this out for, in so many different ways, because it is, in a very different way to other clubs, this is an endemic problem. And I think if next season it would continue in this vein, you've got to think, well, hang on, what? Because I don't think Klopp is the problem. There's so much going on. But inevitably, owners of football clubs now, I know they're trying to sell and da-di-da-di-da, but you never know what could happen. Well, and it could be very upsetting for some of these supporters.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's going to be a big part of it, isn't it?
Because, and that's projecting into the future, so
rightly.
I've gone a bit
beloved.
Yeah.
But you're right, he does have a lot of credit in the bank. There's a strange situation where when you watch Liverpool, there's no intensity there. Yeah. That's what they're known for. That's what he did so well. And you wonder, are they trying to play a different style? Is he trying to evolve them with the players they have and look towards regenerating and doing something slightly new? Or is it just that this squad can't do it anymore, that the midfield isn't tooled for it, that certain players have aged out of being able to do it? Uh-huh. But also, I think, you know, going back to how much credit Klopp has in the bank, the kind of spikiness in the post-match.
Well,
I think it's just poor leadership at this point.
That was poor,
It really doesn't, this doesn't help. So yeah, in the post-match, his actual words were, I have no explanation for you. I'm sorry, it needs to change. These first 15 minutes cannot be allowed. It needs to change. I have no explanation. And I don't know, maybe he's trying to sort of deflect from the players' performances by heaping that pressure onto himself. But we've seen a lot of this recently, and it does look like he doesn't really have a plan.
He also said, the third goal, I don't count.
Well, it's ridiculous,
because
isn't
it was the first time they passed the halfway line in the second half.
It's spoiled and petty.
Everybody else is counting it.
It just piles up to, I mean, people already have this view of Klopp now that he's very, very bitter, very, very bad loser. The nice guy act has completely dropped off from what everybody used to love him.
Yeah. Mm.
But he said so many ridiculous things. I swear he's mentioned the wind before and just silly. And people's going to be like, what are you doing, man? And you know, that's why people go, oh, he's absolutely lost it. Things like this do not help.
But a great win for Wolves nonetheless. How do you think Lopetegui's been doing at Wolves, David?
I think Lopetegui can sometimes just set his defensive stall out too much. He can be a little bit too negative, I think. Mm. Over-egg it a little bit when they are moving forward. But Liverpool's style really, really played into Wolves' hand here. Mm. And I think this is kind of what Lopetegui wants to execute in terms of fast counters, fullbacks, wingers pushing up extremely high. Mm-hmm. So, and they've added some decent players as well. So you'd expect them to, I think you'd be looking at them now. He's been in there enough time to really put in what he wants to do. They should be, I think, having a strong run.
You'd be surprised if they went down, wouldn't you?
I'd be really, really surprised. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's a good coach. He's got some flaws, but I think ultimately, I think they should kick on now. This is the sort of win that Spurs you want a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, so them and Forest are kind of picking up some wins. Forest in particular have hit a bit of form there, and they are as well. And you look at Leeds, who are dropping like a stone now.
Appalling.
We expect an uptick from Everton. Well, we've already seen it. Bournemouth lost 5-6, and Southampton really, really struggling. But another side who were in there, who have lost 4 in their last 6, who we've really spoken about that much, and they're only 3 points above the relegation, going, Leicester City. And it's just as well that they beat Aston Villa 4-2, because otherwise, you know, their name would then be attached to all this chat. And that's something you don't actually want, because that piles the pressure and so on. Those fans are acutely aware, the Leicester fans are acutely aware of where they are on the table, of course. But you want to stay out of that chat. You want the spotlight off you a little bit, I suppose. And that win would have done a little bit to do that. I mean, it was a mad old game. It was chances, goals either end and so on. It was good stuff. Most of them in the first half, of course. But as Unai Emery put it simply after the game, we had mistakes today.
they did. I think there was a lot of individual errors. There was a lot of individual mistakes, absolutely. But I think sometimes Emery's approach doesn't help. He's gone with a high line against the counter-attacking team and it remains an issue for him. It just always has, I think, you know. And I think sometimes Emery's system can cause panic in players, and then it brings on errors and individual mistakes. We've seen it at every club he's been at.
Yeah, I mean, Villa have improved under him. There's no doubt
about
that.
Oh, absolutely,
immediately, impressively.
Positive outweighs the negative massively with him, yes.
Totally, absolutely no chat of relegation or anything like that. They're looking up the table rather than down. I mean, could even finish in the top half, which seemed very unlikely, of course, not that long ago. I mean, you talk about the errors, though. I mean, that first goal for Leicester, when Maddison... I mean, but we see that a lot now in the Premier League. I mean, there was nearly a goal like that at Brighton, of course. Yeah.
It's a percentages thing.
Yeah,
it?
Exactly.
It looks ridiculous when it doesn't come off, but if you hoof the ball all the time, the chances of it just coming straight back to you are higher.
What do you think?
Long may it continue.
What did you think of James Maddison when he scored? Immediately cupped both ears in front of that. He loves it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He absolutely loves it. They have been missing Maddison, of course, in recent games, although he's been back for a little while now. Maddison himself said after the game, Tete was outstanding. He plays on the right, which is where I've had to play. Interesting choice of words. So it's nice to get some place. So it's nice to get some pace out there, which is
very self-effacing.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Well, Maddison doesn't need pace because he just shoots from distance, and it sometimes works out. When he said Tete was outstanding, I thought to myself, well, you saw the game on Friday night at Stamford Bridge, didn't you? You know, a great weekend for Tete's, David. You have
very
to say.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I was watching this game with my Fulham mates, by the way.
At
the start of the game, I was trying to be like, oh yeah, Mudryk, Enzo Fernandez, and he was like, Tete's going to be man of the match here, and I tell you what, he was up there. He was excellent. Uh-huh. But Leicester's Tete also, interesting one. I mean, Lyon's an absolute mess at the moment. I was speaking to Andy Brassel on the Continent last week about this. Lyon's in an absolute state. Tete's obviously, they've got an opportunity here. I think, you know, it's just come up. Leicester have taken advantage of it. And he could be the sort of sign and that, you know, reinvigorates them where others haven't worked out. I think what Tete did on his debut was kind of what they maybe wanted a bit more from Dakar, which obviously hasn't worked out. And I think that's part of the reason, and I've said this before, new signings, Rodgers hasn't really properly integrated, and I think that's been a big part of their problems this season.
Indeed, yeah.
We mentioned recently Kelechi Iheanacho
as well,
fallen off, and him getting back amongst the goals is really, really important as well.
I think it is, because Vardy has not been among the goals really this season. Now, I understand, you know, age happens to us all. We didn't think it would happen to Vardy,
no.
but it clearly is.
He's one of those players. I think there's a bit of a group there: Soyuncu, Tielemans, Vardy. There's a few players there that have just been around, and you can see they've kind of switched off, and they evidently just need moves, and Leicester need to move on also, because there's still just a few remnants of that previous, you know, that previous era that they need to move on from. And I think I think Rodgers, it'll be interesting to see whether Rodgers does get to oversee it, or Leicester do make a change.
Well, Tielemans is one who's been linked to Arsenal.
He's going to go. Yeah, he's not going to be part of it
for so long. Where would Vardy go?
Yeah, this is an interesting
surely
one,
retire Costa del Sol.
I think he might retire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you see him going back down the leagues?
No, I'd retire if I was him.
I would just retire as well.
You know,
he's got, as I say, Southern Spain handing out little shots outside clubs written all over him. Is he not?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he might have immense legal fees to cover through no fault of his own. So who knows?
True. He might well do.
Can we talk about Coutinho's disallowed goal for a moment?
We can, because
that's what they wanted from him. The fact that it was brilliant and doesn't count.
Oh no!
Seems to kind of sum up his time at Villa a bit at the moment, doesn't it?
It was absolutely gutting. Absolutely gutting. It was also a bad weekend for Emi Martinez. Not only was he rounded for three of Leicester's four goals.
Got to be rounded once.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that's frustrating for a goalkeeper, isn't it? Yeah. Just take the shot at me. Yeah. Shoot at me like a man. The International Football Association Board announced last week that they're going to ban goalkeepers from distracting penalty takers at spot kicks.
Yeah, I mean, where does this... What are the boundaries of that?
Again, David is fuming.
Yeah, I'm kind of semi-fuming myself.
Let's kill everything that's fun about the game. It's unbelievable. I mean, you love it, honestly. The highlight of him just putting off penalty takers is brilliant. It's gamesmanship. Yeah. It's completely legal. It's completely normal.
It's a pressurised situation. You know, it's like if you stop the goalkeepers doing that, there's still loads of pressure. And like, can the goalkeeper not move on his line? Like, at what point does that become him just setting himself and gamesmanship? Like, it's... I think the
idea that, the goalkeeper sort of moving along the line, as you say, I think it's totally fine. I don't think a goalkeeper should, you know, if the goalkeeper sort of boots the ball away. But
obviously,
like,
yeah, that's overstepping the mark.
Yeah, but how can you ban that? Have we done it?
Exactly, yeah.
But even
then,
I say that, it's overstepping the mark. But is it really? Yeah. I actually like that as well. It's just a bunch of nerds, boffins somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Just talking heads, trying to stop everything that's fun.
We've had enough of the boffins, have we not?
The interesting thing will be, how will Argentina get around this? Because they'll find a way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's it. Maybe it brings out their true creativity.
They love it.
Yeah.
And I love that they love it.
Yeah, indeed. Yes. Chaps, let's end the show speaking about Southampton, shall we? They were hammered 3-0 at Brentford. I mean, Brentford, you know, having a great season as well. I think Brentford and Brighton... Well, Brighton, I don't think it's gone under the radar. I think people are aware, of course, with Potter's moving. But Brentford, up in seventh.
Yeah.
A game in hand on Tottenham Hotspur. You know, you win that. I mean...
So much fun as well, Brentford. They're enjoyable to watch.
They ooze confidence.
Yeah.
And they play in such an exciting style, and they, as you say, they're great to watch, and they can play like that against anyone in the league.
They are a real true unit.
Yes.
Everyone knows their jobs. They don't rely upon any individual. That's why I thought the Eriksen talk in the summer was just ridiculous. They're like, oh, they've lost Eriksen. They're not going to have enough creativity. They're not going to score enough goals. Extremely lazy.
If anything, that helped them, you could argue.
Exactly. And there were comments coming from people who hadn't watched Brentford for the past 5-6 years. Mm. You know, what they were like in the Championship and how they replaced Watkins. Everybody said, oh, when Maupay leaves, oh, they're going to suffer. They didn't. When Watkins leaves, oh, they're going to suffer. Ben Rama leaves, they're going to suffer. They never did.
Yeah.
They went again. And
true of Dean Smith as well. It's a well-run club.
Exactly.
I think that's it. I think the really lovely things about Brentford and Brighton this season are two really well-run clubs. And they are, in Premier League terms, and even in historical terms in football in this country, they are two sort of fairly smaller clubs. Let's be honest, it's absolutely no disrespect. You're actually amplifying that backs up the great stuff that's happening. You know, both, obviously Brentford much more recently, but, you know, new stadiums, you know, it's totally new vibe at the club. I don't know if you call Brighton Stadium new anymore, but, you know, you consider it what it was not that long ago, of course, and blah, 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 without boring everybody with that. But seeing these two really well-run teams who are playing great football, very entertaining as well. And that's it. They're not just sort of shithousing their way up there. And if they were, that's fine. Or it's not just about, oh, you know, be solid and so on. And if they were, that would be absolutely fine. They are playing with great verve and excitement. Some wonderful players there. And it would be superb if, realistically, one of them, I mean, both might be a bit of a stretch, but if one of them could get a European place, actually.
I think it would be a just reward for how those clubs are run. Mm-hmm. Both on and off the field as well. I think they're a fantastic model. I'd even go as far as saying, if you look at the way those two clubs are run, they should be used as a guide almost for when new owners, I think, come into the Premier League to say this is how to, you know, the fit and proper person's test and such.
Oh, yeah. So it's rigorous, isn't it?
Root and branch.
How do you get past it?
Yeah, they should be seen as the model. This is how to run the club. Mm. This is how you should do things. Your turnover, your wages and such like that. This is how you should be done.
Yeah, although people with enormous amounts of cash and egos tend not to learn from good examples from that. But there we are, David. I sincerely hope that you're right there. But they were on Southampton were on the receive again from another great Brentford performance, and it's worrying times for Southampton as it has been for most of the season. Really, they are bottom of the league. They are a few points adrift from safety.
Nathan Jones has very quickly stepped up as an intense weirdo, isn't he? Didn't see that coming quite to this degree.
An intense weirdo is exactly the description. He said post-match about his Southampton team, I don't see myself in that team. At the end of the day, I only look at myself, and I look at myself in the mirror and I think, am I the best I can be? To be honest with you, I can be better.
I mean, so
he's you know, that's one of the more, you know, palatable quotes that he said.
I mean, one of them was along the lines of, there are certain people in the village and certain members of the team that I just have to deal with. And he started talking about his own XG at Luton, saying it was among the best in Europe.
But apparently keeps bringing up Luton all the time. Like, in any situation, he'll go, oh, well, Luton, I did this. And you can imagine, which Southampton player gives a shit about that?
Yeah, exactly,
what do they know about his experience at Luton? They are wanting to know about him here at Southampton. Yeah. What can you bring to the table
in
there?
In the Premier League.
And you can clearly see those statements are classic ones where you completely drive a wedge between you and the owners, but also you and the players as well.
Yeah.
And I'd also noticed, by the way, there was a Twitter space last night titled, you know, get him out sort of thing. And one of his players was in there.
Oh,
wow.
How about that?
Mm.
Well, you can name the player because
Romeo Lavia.
There we go.
Yeah, who he subbed.
It's on public display.
Who he subbed, and it caused much to the ire of the Saints fans as well. And they were saying, "Don't know what you're doing." So you can clearly,
they have seemed, they've kind of turned very quickly. And understandably, I suppose, given the severity of the situation.
Well, I think
they will go down under this.
He spent a lot of money as well.
He was up against it from the start, but he's not doing himself any favours with comments like that. And that's the kind of thing that angers the owners. So it would be a quick sacking if they did get rid of him. But in terms of the league, things aren't improving, really. You would say, I mean, well, they're bottom. So, you know, it's looking bleak and those kind of comments, you know. Could we see yet another roll of the dice for the Southampton owner?
I think Southampton and Leeds, I think, could still make decisions before now and the end of the season. Those are the two I'm looking at. And but it always comes down. Look, it's all well and good saying get this guy out, but who is available to replace these guys?
Well, I'll tell you right now.
Go on.
Alan Pardew. right?
Who has previous at Southampton as well. I see what you did there.
Yes, previous being the operative word. Yeah, he was sacked by Greek side Aris FC on the weekend after just 21 games in charge. So he might not be an ideal candidate, Jim, but, you know, with regards to Southampton, he knows the club.
Alan Previous Pardew. He's parachute him in, do a job. Ruffle some feathers.
He did get 9 wins out of those 21 games. You know, Southampton could do with a few wins themselves. But, yeah, that is more than his last 3 jobs combined. So he's on an upward curve, but he still got sacked. Good old Pards. Well, I think it'd be unlikely if that was to happen. Lads, we end the show with some breaking news that Manchester City have been charged by the Premier League with numerous breaches of financial rules following a 4-year investigation. There are over 100 charges and sanctions, which could include points deductions and even expulsion from the league if found guilty. Now, that immediately makes me think a guilty verdict is unlikely. But that's serious stuff, so we shall have to wait and see.
This has just come in, so everything we've just spoken about is everything we know, but yeah, wow.
Watch this space, as I'm sure you are. Right, everybody, Kate is back with an episode of The Drop-In with Peter Drury. They're talking about some of those sexy Europeans ahead of the return of the Champions League next week, which Peter has captured so many times down the years. That is out tomorrow. And one of the nicest and loveliest and enthusiastic men you could ever meet, Peter Drury. So it's well worth getting your ears around. But there we are. Thank you for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Jim Campbell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, David Cartledge. Oh,
thank you, my man.
And thank you, Pete Donaldson. Pete had to nip off for the last 15 minutes there, which is why you didn't hear his voice. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. See you tomorrow for The Drop-In.
Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.